In 2026, I mean, an AI agent doesn't just, you know, write a quick script for you.
Right. Not anymore.
No, it's wild. It literally reads your live database, spots an anomaly in user behavior, queries an external API to cross-reference the error, writes the patch, and then submits the pull request.
Yeah, all completely autonomously.
Exactly. All before you even pour your morning coffee. Welcome to today's deep dive.
It really is an entirely different landscape compared to just a few years ago. I mean, the capability ceiling has completely vanished.
But here's the catch. If you try to build that autonomous agent today using like random YouTube tutorials or scattered documentation, your system is going to collapse.
Oh, absolutely.
You will end up with this fragile, hallucinating mess. And that brings us to today's source material. We are looking at the Generative AI Syllabus 2026, Complete Curriculum Guide from Generative AI
It's a
Masters.
fantastic resource.
Yeah. It really is. Our mission today is to take you from the edge of that confusing swamp of buzzwords, you know, things like RAG, PE, FT, and embeddings, and give you the exact production-grade blueprint for building robust AI systems.
Okay, let's unpack this because looking at the sheer volume of technologies required to build enterprise AI today can feel, well, completely overwhelming.
Yeah, information overload is actually the primary reason projects fail in production right now. Developers try to skip to the flashy stuff, you know.
Right, they want to build the agents immediately.
Exactly. The agents complex prompts, but they do it without understanding the underlying architecture. And a structured syllabus isn't just a list of topics, it is a critical sequence.
Which makes sense. You can't build a skyscraper on a swamp.
Right. When you are building systems that execute code autonomously, skipping a foundational layer leaves these invisible structural gaps. And those gaps, they won't show up in a simple testing sandbox.
Or the second you scale up.
Exactly. The second you deploy to thousands of users, the whole system breaks. So let's start pouring the concrete. Before we get anywhere near large language models, the blueprint forces us to start with Python.
Yes, the absolute core.
The source actually calls it the language of generative AI. It requires an understanding of variables, dictionaries, pandas for handling data sets, NumPy for numerical operations, and calling APIs. But I want to push back on this right away.
Okay, go ahead.
We are talking to an audience that is very familiar with AI's capabilities. Do you really need to be a Python expert messing with data frames and matrices when you can just, you know, prompt a model in natural language?
Well, we have to draw a hard line between an AI consumer and an AI engineer.
Okay.
If you just want to consume AI, yeah, natural language is totally fine. But this syllabus is about building actual applications. It's like learning how to use an oven versus trying to open a high-end bakery.
Oh, I like that. That's a great analogy.
Thanks. Python isn't just a language here. It acts as the central nervous system of your application. When you build a generative AI tool, the AI itself is essentially just a brain floating in a jar.
A brain in a jar.
Python is the circuitry that connects that brain to the real world. It handles the API request to the model endpoint, it structures the raw JSON data the model spits back, and it formats it into a user interface. Without Python, you basically just have a really smart model that can't actually touch anything.
That makes total sense. So you aren't really coding the AI's thoughts. You are coding its ability to interact with your business logic.
Exactly.
And that Python foundation bridges directly into understanding how these models actually learn. The syllabus quickly moves past the basic definitions of machine learning, you know, supervised versus unsupervised learning, and dives straight into the mechanics of deep learning.
Specifically, neural networks and backpropagation.
Right. Backpropagation. That sounds intense.
It's actually the engine of all learning. It is essentially a massive calculus-driven blame game.
A blame game. How so?
Well, when a neural network makes a prediction and gets it wrong, backpropagation is the mathematical process of calculating exactly how much each individual parameter contributed to that error.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and then adjusting those specific weights backward through the layers so it does better next time.
And the architecture of those layers changes depending on the data, right? Like, the blueprint covers convolutional neural networks, or CNNs, for image processing.
Right, which are fascinating.
Yeah, instead of looking at a whole image at once, a CNN acts like a sliding window, moving across pixels to detect basic features like edges, then textures, and eventually complex shapes.
And for sequences like text, we used to look at recurrent neural networks. But everything changes when the syllabus hits transformers.
Right. The big one, the architecture behind GPT.
Transformers are the watershed moment for AI. What's fascinating here is the concept of attention. From that landmark 2017 paper, attention is all you need.
Right, that paper basically started this whole era.
It really did. See, before Transformers, models read text strictly left to right, sequentially. If they read a really long paragraph, they often forgot the beginning by the time they reach the end.
Which is a huge problem.
Huge problem. The attention mechanism solves this by looking at all the words simultaneously and mathematically weighting the relationships between them, regardless of their position.
Okay, give me a concrete example of how that weighting actually changes the model's understanding.
Sure. Think about the word bank.
Okay.
If a sentence reads, I sat by the river bank versus I deposited money in the bank, a transformer uses self-attention to look at the surrounding words.
Ah, I see where this is going.
Right. In the first sentence, river exerts a heavy mathematical pull on bank, telling the model to activate the geographical representation. In the second, money and deposited pull bank toward the financial institution representation. It is literally context rendered as mathematics.
Context rendered as math. That is wild. Which brings us to the core engine. We have the architecture, and now we need the models that actually drive the application.
Section 2 of the blueprint.
Exactly. It covers large language models, and it starts with the absolute bedrock tokenization and context windows. We hear tokens all the time, usually when we're, you know, being billed for API usage, but what is mechanically happening during tokenization?
It is crucial to understand that AI does not read letters or syllables the way we do. Tokenization is the process of mapping human language into a fixed dictionary of numerical IDs.
So it's just turning words into numbers.
Basically, a token might be a single character, a whole word, or a common chunk of a word. By translating text into these numerical chunks, the model can feed them into those complex transformer equations we just discussed.
And the context window.
The context window is simply the maximum array of these numerical IDs the model's memory buffer can hold at one time for processing.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because once the model is digesting those tokens, we humans have to steer it.
Right, which brings us to prompt engineering.
Yeah, and the Silius frames it far beyond the old literal intern analogy. Like, it's not just about giving instructions to an intern anymore. It's about programmatically forcing the model's architecture to behave predictably.
Yes. Prompting in 2026 is a true engineering discipline. We aren't just typing nicely. We are actively shaping the probability distribution of the model's output.
Which means using specific techniques, right? Like zero-shot or few-shot prompting.
Exactly. The syllabus emphasizes few-shot prompting heavily. That's where you provide mathematical patterns of inputs and desired outputs within the prompt itself.
And chain-of-thought prompting. That is a massive one.
Oh, absolutely.
Instead of asking the model for an answer, you explicitly command it to print out its step-by-step reasoning before arriving at a conclusion. But, why does writing out its thoughts make the final answer more accurate?
It all comes down to how next token prediction works.
Yeah.
If the model jumps straight to the answer, it only has your original question as its context.
What?
But by forcing it to generate intermediate reasoning steps, you are actively expanding the context window with relevant logical tokens. The model then uses its own generated logic as the context to predict the final answer. It drastically reduces hallucination rates.
It's like it's building a bridge of logic tokens to get to the right answer.
Right.
But beneath those tokens, beneath the prompting, is honestly the most mind-bending concept in this entire syllabus.
Embeddings.
Embeddings, yes.
Embeddings are the secret sauce of all modern AI. I could nerd out about this all day. If tokenization is how we chop up words, embeddings are how we give those words meaning.
Okay, break that down for us.
Well, an embedding is a coordinate in a high-dimensional vector space.
Okay, stop right there. We are going to need a visual for that. High-dimensional vector space sounds like astrophysics.
It kind of is. Imagine a massive three-dimensional map of a galaxy. But instead of stars, every point of light is a concept.
A concept. Okay.
In this case, the gravitational pull is semantic meaning. The vector for king and the vector for queen are physically grouped close together in this galaxy. The vector for apple is far away, but it's really close to banana.
Oh, I get it. So similar meanings are physically close together in the math.
Exactly. But modern embeddings don't just use three dimensions. They use thousands. This allows the math to capture incredibly nuanced relationships like tone, context, and underlying logic.
So when the model is thinking, it isn't reasoning in English at all. It is navigating this massive mathematical galaxy, moving from coordinate to coordinate, and then translating that final coordinate back into an English token.
That is the exact mechanism. And in 2026, those coordinates aren't just for text.
Right. Multimodality.
Exactly. The syllabus makes it clear that multimodality is the absolute baseline now. A modern embedding space places the text golden retriever, an image of a dog, and the audio waveform of a bark into the exact same mathematical neighborhood.
Wow. So they just share the same coordinates.
Yes. That is why you can prompt a model like Gemini or GPT-4 with a video and ask it a text question. The architecture processes them natively in the same vector space.
Okay, so we have models that can understand text, images, and video through vector mathematics. We know how to steer them with advanced prompting. But an engine that just sits there answering questions is, frankly, obsolete.
Right. Talking isn't enough anymore.
Exactly. We need to look at the defining shift of the 2026 curriculum. We are moving from models that just chat to models that take action. And this is where LangChain and agentic AI come in.
This is the pivot from theory to enterprise reality. A chatbot answers a query and stops. An agentic AI, though, receives a high-level goal, breaks that goal down into a multi-step execution plan, and then uses external tools to achieve it.
Walk us through a specific agentic workflow. What is it actually doing behind the scenes?
Let's take customer support. Say a user emails asking for a refund. The standard LLM could draft a polite refusal or acceptance based on a prompt. But an agent, powered by a framework like LangChain, intercepts the email. Step one, it extracts the order number.
Okay, basic extraction.
Step two, it autonomously writes a SQL query, shits your company's database, and checks if the item was purchased within the 30-day window. Step three, it sees the purchase is 15 days old.
It's doing the math.
Right. Step four, it drafts an API call to Stripe, or whatever payment gateway you use, to actually initiate the refund.
Right.
It plans, it routes data, and it executes.
I have to throw a massive red flag up here.
I thought you might.
If these agents are writing database queries and calling financial APIs autonomously,
right.
What happens when it hallucinates? Are humans just out of the loop entirely? Because giving a probabilistic text generator the keys to a production database sounds like a recipe for a catastrophic business failure. How do we actually enforce safety here?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the answer lies in programmatic guardrails. Humans are not out of the loop. The loop has just been redesigned.
Okay, how so?
The syllabus heavily focuses on human-in-the-loop architecture. Mathematically and programmatically, you don't give the agent direct write access. You give it the ability to draft the API call, but the execution layer contains a hard-coded pause.
Oh, a pause.
Yes. The system flags a human operator, presents the drafted SQL query and the intended financial action, and requires a cryptographic sign-off before execution.
So the agent is doing like 90% of the tedious data gathering and drafting, but a human is still pulling the final trigger.
Always. But even with a human pulling the trigger, the agent is useless if it is acting on outdated or incorrect information. Remember, an LLM's baseline memory is frozen at its last training date.
Right, and it has zero access to your proprietary company data.
Exactly.
Which brings us to the most vital acronym for enterprise trust, Retrieval Augmented Generation.
The game changer.
Let's move past the basic open book test analogy for a second. Our gauge is more like having a hyper-organized executive assistant.
I like that.
When you ask the AI a question, the assistant intercepts your query, runs down to your company's secure archives, pulls three specific files related to your question, highlights the relevant paragraphs, and drops them on the AI's desk before the AI is allowed to speak.
That captures the workflow perfectly. The AI is explicitly instructed, answer the user's query using only the highlighted documents on your desk. If the answer isn't there, say you don't know.
But mechanically, how does the assistant find those files so fast?
Through the vector databases we discussed earlier, platforms like Pinecone, Chroma, or FayAS, you take all your company's PDFs, Slack logs, wikis, and you pass them through a chunking algorithm.
Chunking?
Yeah, chunking breaks large documents down into smaller semantic blocks of text. You then convert each chunk into an embedding a mathematical vector and store it in the database.
So when the user asks a question, the system converts their question into a vector and then does a mathematical similarity search to find the document chunks sitting closest to it in that galaxy map we talked about.
Yes. It retrieves the mathematically relevant facts, injects them into the context window, and generates the answer. This is why RAG is the gold standard for truth in 2026.
Because it's auditable.
Fully auditable. Every single claim the AI makes can be traced back to a specific cited chunk of your proprietary data. Hallucination drops to near zero.
Okay, so we have an active agent and we have an auditable, trustworthy memory system via our RAG. So why do we need the next section of our blueprint? Module 10 covers fine-tuning, but wait, if RAG is already giving the model all of our specific facts, aren't RAG and fine-tuning doing the exact same thing?
That is actually the most common point of confusion for engineers entering the space. But they solve fundamentally different problems. Our RAG is about retrieving knowledge. Fine-tuning is about altering the model's fundamental behavior and structural formatting.
Okay, give me a breakdown of that distinction.
Imagine you are deploying an AI assistant for a massive legal firm. You use our RAG to allow the model to look up specific case files and prior rulings.
Write the facts.
But you use fine-tuning to permanently alter the model's tone, so it inherently writes like a senior partner. Fine-tuning adjusts the internal neural weights, so the model naturally outputs legal jargon, correctly formats citations, and maintains a clinical, objective tone. RAG gives it the facts. Fine-tuning gives it the personality.
But retraining a model with billions of parameters costs millions of dollars in compute power. Nobody's doing that for a specific company use case.
And that is exactly why the syllabus focuses on PEFT, parameter-efficient fine-tuning. Specifically, a technique called LoRA.
Laura, how does that avoid the huge costs?
Well, instead of unfreezing the massive 100 billion parameter neural network and rewriting the whole encyclopedia, LoRA freezes the original model completely.
Wait. Completely frozen.
Completely. It then injects a tiny secondary neural network and adapter that sits alongside the original layers. You only train that small adapter.
So you are basically appending a specialized glossary to the back of the encyclopedia rather than rewriting every single page.
That is exactly the mechanism. It takes a process that used to require a warehouse of GPUs and reduces it to something you can run on a single high-end machine in an afternoon.
That's incredible. And this level of customization demands a solid operational framework, which leads right into Module 11. It dives into the tools required to orchestrate all this. It heavily features Hugging Face, which serves as the central hub for open source models and data sets. But more importantly, it introduces MLOps.
Machine learning operations.
Yeah, and the critical concept here is model routing.
MLOps is where economics meet engineering. Running a massive, highly capable model like GPT-4 or Claude Opus for every single user query is financially ruinous.
Because they charge per token.
Exactly. And most user queries are incredibly simple things like reset my password or summarize this short email.
So you don't use a sledgehammer to crack a walnut.
You build a routing architecture. A tiny, incredibly cheap classification model reads the incoming prompt. If it is a simple task, it routes it to a fast, low-cost model like Llama 3AB or Claude IQ.
And if it's complicated.
If the prompt involves complex multi-step reasoning or deep coding, the router sends it to your heavy-duty, expensive model. Dynamic routing ensures your application remains both intelligent and economically viable.
Which is vital when you start pushing these projects into the real world. The final module demands you actually build a deployable portfolio custom chatbots, multimodal RAG systems handling images and text, but the curriculum explicitly bookends all of this technical building with advanced governance. The era of move fast and break things is dead in generative AI.
Because the blast radius of a broken AI system is just too large now. The 2026 syllabus strictly requires an understanding of the EU AI Act, which categorizes AI systems by risk level and enforces massive financial penalties for non-compliance.
Yeah, you can't just ignore that.
No. It also covers bias mitigation, how to mathematically audit your vector spaces to ensure you aren't baking historical prejudices into your autonomous agents.
And it covers edge AI, the realization that sending highly sensitive proprietary data to a cloud endpoint is a massive security risk. We are now seeing the push to run heavily optimized smaller models locally on company devices, ensuring the data never leaves the internal network. Privacy is now a structural engineering requirement, not an afterthought.
Absolutely.
So, what does this all mean? We started out staring at a wall of intimidating concepts. But when you follow this curriculum, the architectural necessity of every layer becomes obvious. You learn Python because you need a nervous system to handle data and APIs. You learn transformers and tokenization to understand how mathematical weights generate human logic.
Right.
You learn prompting and LLMs to steer that logic. You introduce agents to give the system the ability to execute, and you anchor those agents in truth using vector databases and RAG. Finally, you use Loray to tailor the behavior, dynamic routing to control the costs, and strict governance to ensure it doesn't destroy your business. Learning in this specific sequence prevents the structural collapse that happens when you rely on patchwork tutorials.
This raises an important question for you, the listener, regarding your own engineering path. Where are your blind spots? Are you trying to build a complex LangChain agent without truly understanding the JSON structures your Python scripts need to handle?
That happens all the time.
It does. Or are you trying to fix hallucination with better prompting when what you actually need is a robust RRAG pipeline? The difference between a hobbyist and a production engineer is the willingness to master the underlying mechanics.
The map is laid out. But looking at the trajectory of this 2026 syllabus, there is a fascinating thought experiment I want to leave you with. We have just spent an entire deep dive outlining the rigorous step-by-step process humans must undergo to learn how to build these autonomous AI agents. Agents that can plan, route, reason, and code entirely on their own.
Yeah, they are incredibly capable.
So, if that is what human engineers are learning to build today, will the 2030 syllabus even require human comprehension? Or will the agents we deploy tomorrow be the ones iterating, optimizing, and rewriting the engineering curriculum of the future? Something to mull over the next time you watch a model debug your code in real time.